Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Foodie Shake Podcast. It's Cedric the Chef.
And Lisa the Foodie.
And this is episode 64 of the Foodie Shake Podcast, y'all. First of all, I would like to start off like we always do, sending out positive energy to everybody. Hope everybody's been having a great time, enjoying some great food, just living and enjoying life, you know. As the world gets a little tougher to live in, we have to find little refugees of things that we like and enjoy in this world. So I hope a lot of that's been food driven for a lot of people. So what's been going on with you, Lisa?
Oh, Sad, it's been a minute since we have talked. So I'm pretty sure there's a lot that has gone on and a lot that I have forgotten to do to that has happened. But and overall, I will say this, I've spent too much money on food outside of the house. That is definitely, working my nerves to the point where I'm concerned. And the other day, I went to go get some soul food, and I thought it was criminal that for two people to be eating some soul food, that the bill was $68.
Yeah.
I was like, this is too much. We've gone too far.
Because most people, they're charging $20 a plate.
A plate, yeah. And if you add a drink and a dessert, you know.
That's the thing. I don't add all that. My bills are kind of simple in a little, because I don't get drinks and I don't get desserts.
Normally I don't, but I was trying to be supportive, new place, doing some stuff.
Supportive is just getting the food, Lisa. We ain't got to get their drinks too. I was
trying homemade tea and all that little stuff and trying to just, my mom got the dessert for the first, I didn't even try the dessert. I don't even have a commentary on the dessert because I didn't try it, but I was just like, the bill is too much, period, point blank. This don't make no sense.
But, these days it's kind of a toss-up because you're going to literally spend that much at the store these days. But the only difference is if you have leftovers that you can eat more than one day.
Right.
That's the advantage of cooking.
That, and you probably cooked it the way you really wanted it to be cooked.
True.
Make it taste.
True. That is true.
Because honestly, that's my commentary. And then what I took away with after spending all that money, I didn't even really eat the food.
And that'd be the thing, you go out, you spend all this money these days and the food is really not that good like it used to be.
Exactly.
I'm like you, I try to support my little businesses, but most of the places I eat out aren't all the time black businesses because I eat a lot of, Indian food, yes. Mediterranean food, things like that. That's what I enjoy.
Right.
But I do go out in there every now and then and get soul food plates from my friends. I have a lot of friends in the restaurant business. So I do my best to try to support them. And it's like every soul food place, and I've said this before, every soul food place, your options are the same.
Exactly. Because that's what I came back to. I came back to that exact. I said, well, okay. So you got to figure out what from this place, because I've tried some beef tips and rice. I am talking about the Color Purple Cafe, a new place in DeSoto. I've tried the beef tips and rice. It is not like it is bad food. It is just that the flavors, something happening. It's doing a little much. Mm-hmm. That's what, because I think they're trying to do a Cajun kind of flair. And I was like, and to soul food, we probably don't need to be adding Cajun spices and things to what is the pork chops that we put?
But that's the thing. That's the thing, though. When you go to places, you're getting their version of a dish that you like.
So. I know. So that's why
Cajun is the hot thing for a lot of people. So, a lot of people try to Cajun everything. Which,
I know.
I was explaining this to my staff the other day. Mm-hmm. I was showing them how to make a carbonara sauce.
Oh, okay.
And because we have a mac and cheese competition coming up, and we're working on our sauces and stuff. And I was trying to explain to one of my workers, and as I created this dish, I wanted him to understand the time that I take to put into something, and it's not cause I can not take my time, and I can rush something and give you something that is just okay. But that is not me. Mm-hmm. So for me to create something, I put a lot of time and love and thought into it. And this is what I expect of the people that work for me also. And I try to show them that and teach them this when I get a chance, because one thing about cooking, everybody wants to rush everything. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, you know, but if you take your time and love the food is going to love you back. Mm-hmm. And all it takes is a little time. Some steps and recipes and thought processes of bringing a dish together has to be implemented for a certain reason to get what you want out of that dish.
Now, do you think that that's easier for a trained chef because you know the science of the food?
It's easier for anybody who cares about what they eat.
Okay.
So you have a choice when you go in the kitchen to just throw something together.
Some people want to cook. They just can't cook.
Well, it's not that they can't cook. We start complicating things in our mind first. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing about cooking. We make cooking complicated in our mind first. Mm-hmm. And it's not that difficult. If you can boil water, you can fix a certain meals.
Certain meals, correct.
You know.
You should be able to.
You should be able to. Now, I understand that some people just don't got it.
Their brain don't work.
Yeah, they brain just scattered brained and all that, you know, stuff. But it's really not that complex. And even if you are scattered brained, mm-hmm. you know, when you cook something, long as you enjoy it, mm-hmm. that's all that matters.
That's really all that matters. Right, unless you cook it for somebody else.
Yes. Yes. Now, cooking for somebody else is different. Then you bring in somebody else's opinion on what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And they may not understand what you do.
That's very true, and I'm having that experience because my mom and I have different taste buds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but food is subjected to you as the person. Mm-hmm. Now, when you go out to a restaurant, you expect that chef to, well, y'all think that we go in there and overachieve to make something that just wows you. Well, we really don't. We use a lot of simple things mm-hmm. to create the things that we do. Because sometimes too much is too much. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely.
You know, I can cook people a brisket and they marvel over it. Oh man, it tastes so. And they swear up and down how to put 100 things on it. Mm-hmm. And y'all gonna tell you right now, I only use salt and pepper. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. Salt and pepper.
So, is it all in cooking technique then?
It's in the love that I take to make sure the smoke is right.
That's what's technique. Yeah. Okay, so this is the technique.
The time that I put in it to make sure it's going to get the tenderness that I want.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. But I'm not going in there creating, doing nothing that nobody else can do.
Can't do. And then, but that's that, right? But there are some things and your knowledge and your experience with some things that we're just not, just average person is not going to be able to.
Yes, yes. There are certain techniques, certain ways of cooking that the average person cannot do. But that's getting out of your lane.
Yeah.
Why are you trying to get out of your lane?
Maybe they just trying to cook something.
If you've been flying helicopters all your life, that don't mean you go fly a 737. So we have to learn to stay in our cooking lanes. Now, you can make 1,000 dishes off of ramen noodles in the microwave. Uh-huh. I did it in my life when I was young. Uh-huh. You see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. That was my lane.
Okay.
But I took the time to study and go train at a French culinary school mm-hmm. to make my lane wider.
Yes, that's true. I get that.
But at first, I cooked at my lane. Only thing I knew how to cook was soul food and Mexican food. Uh-huh. You know, that's all I knew how to cook. Right. Was soul food and Mexican food.
Just stay in that lane.
Yeah. Now, once I felt, now, when my grandmother gave me the green light mm-hmm. that I cooked just like her, that was me mastering my version of soul food that my family grew up eating. Mm-hmm. You know, when my grandma, the day that she told me that she can stop cooking because my cooking tastes just like hers, that was like the greatest thing that ever happened in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, because this is the lady who I admired and looked up to for cooking. And to get that nod, man, that I was the next one was good.
That's good. You hear that story from so many, and you see it from so many chefs as their inspiration comes from their parents or grandparents, right?
Oh, yeah, man. I grew up with I grew up with a bunch of ladies that, man, that could make miracles in the kitchen. And it was the type of food that you got the itis out of, you know. Mm-hmm. We ate on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So on Sundays, my grandma would cook big, you know. She would start cooking on Saturday. And for Sunday dinner, when we got out of church.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because we talk about your family often and your grandmother. Where do you think she got her inspiration?
From her mother.
From her mother. So her, okay.
You see, it all started with the patriarch of the family, our great grandmother. Our great grandmother.
Your matriarch.
She was the baker. She was a pastry chef.
Okay.
She threw down, and her daughters learned from her.
Okay. Okay, man.
And then my grandfather.
Yeah.
His sister. My grandfather could cook too.
I was gonna ask. Yeah,
my grandfather could cook.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And his sisters learned from their mama how to cook, and they was mm-hmm. man. Good. I'm telling you, man. I grew up with phenomenal eating.
You enjoyed yourself.
I grew up with some ladies there. And then my best friend, when I call my brother, mm-hmm. yes. his mom, and you know, she could throw down. So I learned all these types of different ways of cooking and styles of cooking from a lot of women that was involved in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who built and made me, just it molded me into the chef that I am today.
Mm-hmm.
It started with those great women, you know. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Which takes us to a project I know that you have coming. It's coming one day. You're gonna see it. I'm talking about the cookbook.
Oh yeah, yeah. The cookbook is pretty much ready. Mm-hmm. I just found some recipe books that I was looking for. With my aunt's fruit tart recipe in it, so I'm gonna add that to it. My grandfather's brother's wife used to fix this fruit tart every 4th of July.
Okay.
And man, it was amazing. And I got the recipe from her one day, so I'm gonna add that recipe to it. My other aunt said I went and had a talk with her. She's gonna give me her strawberry cake recipe.
Oh.
So I'm going to add that to it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
We love the strawberry cake in the Black family. Strawberry cake is important.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to, I think I'm going to add a few more recipes that I like myself.
Okay.
That kind of jump started some of my curiosity. Into expanding my cooking. So, see, y'all, for those who don't know, I knew how to cook before I went to culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to culinary school to learn how to cook. I knew how to cook. Me and my grandma always sat down and watch cooking shows all the time. So that drove my curiosity into fine dining cooking. And that's what I sought out culinary school for, was to learn plating techniques, learn seasonings, and learn how to master herbs and spices, because Southern cooking was simple. It's very simple.
Your grandmother was a fan of Julia Childs, right? Did I get that right or no?
She watched Julia Childs, but she loved the Cajun guy from New Orleans, from Louisiana.
Okay.
We would watch his cooking show, the big white guy. Yeah. I can't remember. I think his name was John something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she loved his channel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But she did. She watched Julia Childs. She watched a little Julia Childs too. My grandma was always fascinated with fancy cooking. And we would have these little, what she called our fancy meals. And she would do this stuffed garnish hen with wild rice and spinach salad with homemade buttermilk ranch dressing. We would sit and eat this dinner by candlelight. You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Me, her, my grandpa,
that's good.
Man.
That's
good. Yeah, us having our fancy meal.
Yes.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good memory. I'm glad that she took the time to show you that, you know, I'm showing you my love this way.
Well, it wasn't that she took the time. I gravitated towards it because I love.
Oh, okay.
And I was a little fat kid. I love to eat. I love to eat. And plus, it was nothing bad that my grandma could cook except liver. I hated liver days.
And I say it that way, because I would imagine that when she saw you gravitate towards it, right? It gave her much more pleasure to even teach you
more. She gave me the green light to start cooking for myself. Mm-hmm. See, my grandmother had sickle cell.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandmother stayed sick a lot. So I spent a lot of time in hospitals when I was young. And my grandma spent a lot of time in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So So what drove me to learn to pay more attention to her cooking was that when she would be sick in the hospital, I would still want to eat. So I would go in there, and I started cooking breakfast.
Okay, yeah.
I started by being able to make my own self breakfast. So I would get up and make my own self, my grandma in the hospital, I'd get up, make myself breakfast, watch my cartoons, you know. Mm-hmm. And then my grandfather always kept like noodles and sandwich meat and stuff for us to make sandwiches and stuff, mm-hmm. you know. So we always had something to eat. But I started out cooking breakfast. Mm-hmm. And as that progressed, and then I got to where I could, she would ask me to watch stuff. Or she would put it on the stove, wash this, stir this, you know. Okay. I would get her and make cakes with my mama and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And then the first dish I ever cooked that I tried was spaghetti.
Gotcha.
And it came out horrible the first. Tasted nothing like what my grandma cooked.
Oh, it didn't taste like her. It may not have been horrible, but it didn't taste like hers, right?
Well, okay. Tasted nothing like what she.
All right.
But it took me a few tries, mm-hmm. and it took me a lot of mistakes mm-hmm. to finally get it down where I learned how to cook spaghetti like her.
Okay.
And yeah.
Was she the taste tester?
Yeah.
To see if
yeah,
it? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And was I the day that I finally hit, she was like, yeah, you got it, grandson.
Okay.
And,
okay.
So it was my grandpa taught me how to barbecue. Mm-hmm. My grandpa cooked what my grandma called country. He made a lot of stews. She hated the way he made spaghetti because he made it. he liked his noodles separate with the meat sauce on, so it was always watery. So yeah, she hated that. Your grandpa can't cook spaghetti. I hate when he cooks spaghetti.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So the meat sauce, he made the two separate.
Yeah. So the noodles, you put the noodles down, then you put like a white folks, you put the meat sauce over. Uh-huh. We call it white folks spaghetti.
Okay. Okay. And then how does she do?
It was all put in a pot. Like she would make her sauce, boil her noodles separate, then she add it simmers together for about another 30-45 minutes. You
okay.
Know,
so,
each other.
Okay. Versus at the end, Okay.
Yeah. Her meat sauce was made in the cast iron pot. You know, and put together, you know, things like that. So, yeah.
The different techniques, but he did what he knew.
Yeah. But I tell you, the second thing I tried to make was meatloaf.
Oh.
And for the longest, I did not understand how to put enough seasoning in the meatloaf.
Oh, the seasoning.
I didn't know how to taste it because it was raw meat. So for years, I would either over-season it all the time or under-season.
Okay.
And so one day I was down with my brother's mom and she was in there cooking. And she was like, she was making meatloaf and I'm sitting there watching her. And she was like, you know how I know when I got it the right? She was like, I'm like, how? And she was like, I take a little piece and I fry it and I taste it. And then I adjust my season for it. And I was like, bingo, that's it. So for me doing that after that, I would just take a little piece, cook it in the skillet real quick, taste it. If it didn't need any more season, I would add whatever season I'm going to add to it. And that's how.
All right, everybody. You just got another tip. If you didn't know, here's a tip for those that didn't know. See, I still don't make meatloaf. I was thinking about making a Salisbury steak.
Yeah.
Thinking about it because I think I remember enjoying that more than meatloaf.
You know, I was always intrigued when I was young about. See, we grew up, TV dinners were big when I was young, and one of the biggest ones was Salisbury steak dinner.
With the little brownie cooked up in the top of the side.
Yeah. And then, you know, you would go to like, we had Wyatt's cafeteria back then. Yeah. It was like the first, it was called Wyatt's. Mm-hmm. And my grandma would always get this chop steak.
Mm, okay.
So I'm like, what is a chop steak?
Right, what is that? Like, see, I'm thinking, well, maybe that's what I like. There's some version of something that I'm thinking.
Y'all,
maybe
all
I
of this
try.
Is just ground meat patties.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, that was the funny part. As when I learned what it really was, I'm like, so with all this, we were just
ways to make ground.
Yeah, just different ways of we was calling the ground meat a hamburger patty without the bread, huh? Because I would always take my chops. My grandma would make a little salmon chops they get the house. I'd make a hamburger out of it, you know. See, when I was everything went between bread when I was young. It got made to a sandwich. So I'd take that gravy, put it on there, and make a good old sandwich. You know? So, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm gonna try one of those because I'm not the biggest ground beef eater in a lot of things, but I try it. I go back and every once in a while. I'm not one of those people. I might eat a burger once a month or two, right? Yeah. Like I'm just like that. So, but and then eat half of it.
Yeah,
so
that's how I was the other day. I had a burger the other day. I only ate half of it. Mm-hmm. But that's how I can't eat a lot no more. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, it's just this new regimen I've been on.
Right.
I don't eat a lot like I used to.
Right. So I'm working on it. I'm trying to be more open because a lot of people make these things. Uh-huh. And I've spent a lot of years going, that's okay. Because I'm not interested, but it wasn't my thing. So I said that instead of everybody calling me bougie and turning my, I was like, I'm not turning my nose up. It's just who I am. So, but I want to try one of these dishes to see if I like it.
That's to funny. See if I like it. You say they call you bougie. I would think I was super bougie. You I went and ate with me, shoe. Mm-hmm. So,
which is one of the reasons why we probably enjoy meal together because we can relate. To, you know, yeah. You guys, it's funny when we do eat a meal together, and he then his bouginess pops up a level, right? And I'm over there with my facial expressions going, what is this? And where are we? And what's this? And I got to taste it anyway, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But yeah. He's always just laughing at me.
Yeah. I like to go and find the strange things on the menu. Everyday things I can cook myself really don't intrigue me when mm-hmm. I go to places. So mm-hmm. I kind of look for things that's a little bit different or something I don't really fix myself all the time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's mm-hmm. what drives me when I go look at menus.
Right. That's why you hear us talk about on the show sometime. Hear us talk about how we pick a menu, how we pick a place, because we're looking for something different. We don't want the just same old most of the time.
Yeah.
Even if it's one thing off of the menu that's different, that might be different, and, you know, it may get us to try. Right.
Yep. So. You told me that you tried to cook some neck bones.
I did.
How did that go?
So I ate them. They were edible. I feel like.
They were edible.
They were edible. They had taste. You know, I built the stuff the way you taught me to build the flavors, you know. But at the same time, I feel like even though I tried the, you know, I had them in the, what is that? The vinegar, the apple cider vinegar to clean and to do and to before I, you know, to wash them. And then I boiled them but it still felt a little gritty. That's to me. That's what I felt. That's what I tasted.
I don't eat neck bones.
I know.
That's one of the,
So now I'm just giving you my honest opinion. Like I still felt a little gritty. Like I cooked them twice as long as I was told to cook them. Right. And I still am like, they fell off the bone. That's true. But it still had a little grittiness there that I thought, maybe this ain't right. Something was missing in this process.
I said, I eat neck bones, but I'm not going to buy no neck bones to cook. That's a food I have never understood. I hate it when my grandma cooked it. My uncle used to barbecue neck bones. I'm like, listen, you got to eat 100 of these damn things. There ain't no meat on them.
The way I know that it was not. That you guys, the way I know that it wasn't good is I was trying and I was doing this to surprise my mother, right? And my mother ate one neck bone. She ate one neck bone. Who eats one neck bone? Right? I was inspired to do this because my sister had made some neck bones and I surprisingly enjoyed them the way she had. So I reached out to her. Well, how do you do this? And she gave me some simple little, and that didn't work. So I guess maybe it was her husband that cooked the next month.
I probably would have treated him like I do oxtails.
Probably. Okay.
You know, and that's like, I would have probably pre-boiled them uh-huh. and let all the stuff come off.
Right. Home, which is what I was trying to do.
And then throw that away, then start over, mm-hmm. put then season the.
I tried to do that. I did.
That's probably what I would have done.
It just still felt a little gritty to me. It wasn't bad. I probably could have ate
a few. I don't know what you mean. About gritty, I ain't never had no gritty beef, but
no,
that maybe there's some sand on it or something. But I understand it's the tail, too. I know. It's the same concept.
I know it's the oxtails, but I don't really eat those.
I don't, I'm saying I ain't never had a gritty. I don't know what you meant by gritty,
So that's what I said. So it's not like I won't try. I wanted to try it, and I may try it again. I couldn't get the, I probably should have let you taste it to see, because I don't have a good enough audience that would give me a good, honest opinion as to what might need to be done differently. Or maybe I just don't really like Nick Bones.
I don't know. Like I said, that's a waste of time to me.
You just like, don't even try it. That's where you are.
Yeah. One of these neck bones around me, is that's the only thing we got left is the neck of the animal.
Well, that's how I feel about ham hocks. I don't even understand it.
Well, ham hocks is part of the, just the leg or the part of the, okay, the bottom part of the ham. But
it was the fattiest thing ever. I almost grossed myself out trying to touch a ham hock.
When you look, it's kind of like the ankle. It's kind of like the ankle of the pig. It's part of the ham. But it's ham. See, I didn't know people made dishes out of ham hocks. To this dude, one of my works, he from Memphis. And he told me that he said he had a restaurant that used to cook ham hocks. But I seen it on TikTok one day.
He cooked them at the restaurant?
Yeah, that they cooked ham hocks and serve them like they serve. People just eat them like that. But I always use ham hocks to season my greens and beans and stuff. So.
You don't eat it.
Yeah, I eat the ham hock once. Really? That's the best part to me. I love that fat. I love it, man. That little meat in between. That once you get past the fat, that little meat on them bones. Man, that be good, like, boy.
No way, you got to eat that.
I love that little. My brother the same way, man. I would tear that ham hock fat up, boy. I'd throw me some hot sauce on it, man. I'm in heaven. So I probably would eat some ham hock. Somebody cook some. I'm gonna try one. I'm gonna cook me a pot of ham hocks.
Oh my, no, don't do that.
Yeah, man, I love ham hocks.
Your heart gonna be clogged up.
I mean, it ain't no worse than eating a pork chop and bacon. So
no, yeah. It don't have a layer of fat on
That's
it.
That's the best part. See, I used to eat pig feet. And pig feet was just that skin. That was the best part. That little meat that was disgusting. In between. That hot sauce on a pig feet, girl. Oh my gosh. I mean, I used to be sucking the toe and be like, man, that's a
pig
feet toe.
No, the
toenail still be on there.
No, that's too much. That's too much. That's too, then no, absolutely not. No.
That's funny.
All right, Sid, I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
From a listener. What is the significance of eating fish tails?
I like the crunchiness of it.
So is there any meat or is this just the tail?
Well, it depends on what are you talking. Are you talking about just the fin part?
Okay.
Or are you talking about the actual back part of the fish? Okay. Yes, it's meat on the back part of the fish. It's not a lot of meat that leads up to the back fin.
Okay.
But when you fry that back fin, it gets crunchy.
Apparently there's a place in Chicago that sells fish tails.
I can see that.
So that's what I'm trying to understand, this concept.
I grew up fishing. My grandpa, we would cook whole catfish all the time. Sometimes that was the best. If you like crunchy stuff, that was because it gets real crunchy. You can just bite it and just chew it. Yeah.
Okay. I had to because we were both confused and I was right along with. I'm not sure the significance of fish tails.
Now, I don't know about opening up a fish tail restaurant.
You're going to sell fish tails and chicken backs. Yeah. I'm sorry.
The chicken oysters.
That would be funny. I bet you people would come to
me. I like the back chicken backs, man. That's where that big piece of skin was. Then you get them two little oysters out of there. You take that skin, you wrap them oysters in that skin and wrap it up in some bread.
Oh, no. Go back to the bread.
You throw some hot sauce and ketchup on there, too.
Ketchup. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's off the chain right there. That's good.
Hilarious. See? Okay. Yeah. There's somebody's idea. Fish tail and chicken back restaurant. Or add that to your menu because most chicken and fish.
I'm going to open up a chicken butt restaurant.
Oh, my goodness.
Cook number fried chicken butts.
No. So my girlfriend cooks her greens with turkey butts.
Yeah. I cook my dressing with turkey butts.
Okay. She says, since they say that's the tasty part, she cooks the greens.
Ass is always tender.
With the turkey butt, but she don't eat it. She don't eat the turkey butt.
Then she got to eat the ass now. Oh, it tastes just like the rest of the turkey.
You guys, I am not laughing at him, giving him the straight face. He can't help it. He cannot help it.
No, it's actually real fatty. It's a little meat in it. But it is real tender. A meat? Little meat.
Oh, a little meat.
Yeah, okay. But it dressing, like I said, I'm on top of my dressing.
Okay.
So the fat from them drips down into my dressing. Okay. It adds a real nice richness to your dressing when you do it like that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, but I put them on top. Mm-hmm. Just let that fat from it just drip down in there.
While it's cooking. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's good. See y'all. Y'all go get y'all some turkey butts. All them things up. Then deep fry them.
Mm-hmm.
Take some hot sauce. Ugh. The ketchup. Mix it together. Mm-hmm. And dip them turkey butts in there. Just enjoy. Y'all thank me later.
Okay. We talked about the concept of what's happening in these restaurants, but do we want to do any specific food restaurant reviews from the places we've been to lately?
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
You don't want to talk about Federales?
We can. Went to some little brunch spot in Dallas called Federales. They're originally a taco and tequila restaurant. And on weekends, they do this big brunch. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty nice. It's $30 a person. They have a nice mimosa bar, probably like seven different kinds of juices and stuff. And they have a Bloody Mary bar too. But they play music the whole time. The buffet was pretty cool. There's a variety of things. They had tacos, of course. They had a couple of smoked meats. They had brisket, sausage, and something else. I think ribs or something. I forgot what it was.
Oh, okay.
They had shrimp. They had a waffle station. They had an omelet station. They had chilaquitas. They had, you can make nachos if you wanted to. They had three different kinds of...
chilaquiles are my weakness, and I'm not supposed to be eating eggs. I'll try to, if a place will make them with some, some egg whites, I'll be happy. But I love just all those things together.
I love chilaquiles.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty nice, though. I would go back. I had a nice little dessert station with donuts and macaroons and things like that. I'm a big macaroon fan, but nice waffle station with all kinds of toppings, and you actually had chicken and waffles if you want chicken and waffles. So yeah, it's pretty nice. Like I said, nice little brunch place where you could want the old fashioned brunch styles where you serve yourself, you know. So it's cool.
Okay.
It's worth checking out if you're in the Dallas area.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna talk about a restaurant that just opened in June of 2023 in Red Oak, the Red Oak area of Texas. And it's called Gravy. Now, I actually agree with the name because their gravy for their gravy and biscuits is delicious. At least the first time I tried it.
What's delicious about the gravy?
I thought it was delicious. First of all, they put... I believe what their specialty is, they put beef, bacon, and something else in it.
More like a red eye gravy kind of thing.
But it's white.
Yeah,
Okay, gotcha. Okay. So it just had a lot of flavor, right? So it had a lot of flavor there. And I like that because I put the gravy over my potatoes and eggs. I don't put it over biscuits. So anyway, don't make no facial expressions with me, but that's how I eat it. So that was good. They also make and serve what I thought was neat. They serve everybody a little bit of their, because they're a bakery as well.
Uh-huh.
So they serve everybody a little bit of their zucchini bread with every meal, which is also delicious. And their biscuits are good. So they're known for the biscuits and this gravy. They also have this dish, some candied bacon, right? So it's funny because the second time I went there, I wanted to order their big cinnamon roll and an order of the candied bacon.
Uh-huh.
That's what I wanted. And I switched off of that.
Uh-huh.
But I ended up getting the candied bacon in the end to take with me. And it was delicious.
Uh-huh.
But I was laughing because I saw a couple come in and order the cinnamon roll with the bacon. And that was their meal. I said, look, see, I should have did it. I'm not the only one that thinks like that, right? But it was delicious. It was a pretty good place to go try, right? They serve their whole menu all day, actually. So you can go in there and get a burger, catfish in the morning, whatever you want. But they only stay open until 2.
Oh, okay.
From 6 till 2, but the whole menu's available that whole time.
Okay.
And so they serve breakfast and lunch. So it was pretty cool. The other place that was on the list for me to try that was new on Cedar Hill was called the Royal Indian.
Uh-huh.
Now that place, you guys, I went to with Cedric and we tried some dishes. And Cedric is a Indian food connoisseur. He loves Indian food. And I am new and trying things out. And he lets me just look and order crazy stuff off the menu. Make a face and laugh and like, okay. But he'll help and help if I ask for help or if I'm just going off, which is what I did at this place, right? Go off. And I order some dish, vindaloo chicken, I believe. And I thought, oh, it has vinegar and all, you know, I love vinegar. That was the spiciest dish. I was like, oh my, like this was Indian food hitting you in the face, right? Yeah. This was, yeah, all the spices were there, the peppers, the everything. And it was okay. It tasted good. It was just too much. It was just too much. And yeah, you needed the lassi, the drink with the yogurt, and you need your naan and you need everything to cool that down. I tell you what Cedric doesn't know, that I think I have decided that when I go to the Indian places that I may try a goat dish next time. Because he knows I don't generally do goat dishes. But I may try it because, see, you're not going to get a beef dish at the Indian place.
Nope.
So
they don't eat cows are sacred to them. They don't eat cows.
Right. So if you're going to, and I find that the chicken, this is me, he's gonna shake his head. I find it's a little overcooked for me. So I tend to want something a little more tender, and I'm thinking I may try a goat dish next time. But their tiki masala and the naan was delicious. Butter chicken is what I want to try next time. A butter dish, but the butter curry, but yeah. So that was good. That's most of my reviews. You guys, that's what I can remember. Like I say, it's been a minute. I think there's a few more restaurants on there, but
yeah, the Indian place was good. Always test out Indian places by their tiki masala dishes, and that's one of my favorite Indian dishes that I love to eat. Besides biryani and coming kamora. But I love the goat dishes that come from the Indian places. Usually very, very good. They are known for being able to take a lot of the game inside of the goat, which it doesn't bother me no way. But food was pretty good, though. I enjoyed it. My tiki masala was pretty good. I had the goat tiki masala. It was pretty good. Samosas was pretty good. I said I recommend going back. I probably would go visit them pretty much, but I got better places. No, not I ain't gonna say better places, but I like a lot of the other places that I go to that are a little more better. So yeah, but it is worth going to if I'm on the side of town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good food though. Good food.
Yeah, good service. I thought it was good service. Nice, clean place. Like I said, it's new.
Yeah, so. Nice atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Atmosphere is real nice. Mm-hmm. Very clean restaurant. Mm-hmm. Decor is very nice. But yeah, it was good.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I tried an Asian food restaurant, which is not new at all. It was just new to me. I had never gone over there.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, it's called Moonwalk.
I know you're talking about. Ooh, I've been there a long time.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, that's too old to be trying them. Shoot, I Yeah, too old to be trying them.
It was just a little greasy.
Yeah.
For me.
You should try Moonwalk by 6 years ago. I told you, you can't be going to an Asian restaurant. They've been open by 2 or 3 years. You asking for trouble.
Oh, I still have my favorite here in DeSoto that I do go to for. And it's gone through ups and downs. So that's something that is interesting to watch or to see, because I've seen that in some restaurants lately, but that's because I'm going to tell you about one that I thought of to try again after having not so good of an experience. But then seeing the reviews, it looks like they're going through a bad period, right? So that's B&N Sushi. I've heard that B&N Sushi is having some struggles.
Well, you notice this is not the original owners. This is like the second owners, I believe.
And probably the third, because at least since you introduced me to it, at least then I enjoyed it, but I went back.
Because
they said within the last year.
Yeah, it wasn't B&N Sushi at first. It was named something else. And then some new owners bought it and turned it into B&N Sushi. But yeah, that it's like the people who first owned a place, it was great. They had good sushi chefs back there. And they always put out good products. Now, I think it was the second owner that bought it that decided to expand it and put the bar on and all that stuff. They became B&N Sushi.
Sushi, they got the tea, they got the nail place now.
Sometimes it's just you're doing too much. And I think the expansion probably hurt them now, because now they just don't concentrate on the food no more. They have to concentrate on the bar and all that stuff now, too. So I think that's probably, you know, one of the big things that hurt them. But I haven't been there in a while. But
I heard some horrible. I saw some horrible reviews, and it makes sense. But they're all recent, more like within the past year.
Yeah,
it kind of went down. I was like, it may come back.
And sushi places thrive off of the sushi chef.
Right.
If you just got an okay sushi chef right there, it's just gonna be an okay sushi that's presented to you. So yeah, I see. I won't be going back there no more.
You ever had a sushi roll that was falling apart?
Yeah, that happens sometimes. Okay. Some chefs, that's how you can tell you got a beginning sushi chef.
Oh, okay.
Because the rolls are not going to be like they're supposed to be. They'll be coming apart and stuff like that. Because they're not rolling them tight.
So, So, that's a sad one, because I enjoyed, they had tempura, which I love. And then I had a little, what is it? What was that? Was it a salmon roll? Was that a baked salmon roll or something I would get from them? And I thought it was delicious. But both dishes, the last time I went, were terrible.
I wouldn't go back there no more. If the service is going down that bad, because it was like that. It was another sushi place used to be over there by Razoo's, and they were to say I tried them the first time and they came, and they was freaking
right
horrible.
Next door.
And after a while they wind up shutting down too, because the service just wasn't good. And like I said, man, sushi is one of them things that I'm real careful about.
You have to be, I would expect.
Yeah, that stuff can make you sick, man. And I eat a lot of raw fish, so I have to be real careful. But yeah, it's one of those things.
Okay.
But yeah, y'all, that's pretty much it for this week, y'all. We'll get back in tune on a couple more stories next week. Next week, I'm going to talk about this automated restaurant in California. We now have a fully AI automated restaurant. We'll discuss this in on next week's show.
All right.
But we thank y'all for listening for the night and for joining us in our little crazy talk. Hopefully, it was entertaining for y'all tonight. And we'll invite y'all back next week for another Foodie Shack show. So good night, everybody.
Good night.
It's the Foodie Shack Podcast, the Foodie Shack Podcast. Foodie Shack Podcast, the Foodie Shack Podcast. Show some foodies, grab a seat with your new friend, Lisa. I tell you what you need to know. Make you love about it also. I'm talking wine and cheese. Stay to this. Won't want to miss servings of this and pass of this. Gotta take you there on the Foodie Shack Podcast.